Homemade Hit Show number 39.
He was like a god walking amongst mere mortals. He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr. And suits so fine they made Sinatra look like a hobo. In other words,
Corin Ashley
was the balls.
Hi there, welcome to the Homemade Hit Show number 39. What you heard there was a song by The Pills, and The Pills are the band of the featured artist today, a guy called Corin Ashley. Just a couple of reminders, I wanted to let you know I'm recording this one in the bedroom, so let me know if it sounds that much different. The website, www.homemadehitshow.com, and forums, homemadehitshow.com/forum, blog at homemadehitshow.blogspot.com, and email me about today's show and any other things at homemadehitshow@gmail.com. So today's show was kind of triggered by Albert Forsell, a Swede living in France. He heard a Corin Ashley song on the show and sent me a note about a CD he bought for him, and it kind of prompted me to get this going. So this is one of those interview-by-email shows. I sent some questions to Corin, and he answered them, and then we'll play some of his songs. So check it out. This is Corin Ashley. Let's get started. Okay then, Corin, welcome to the show, and let's get started with my first generic question of the day. Can you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and about your background?
Hello, I'm Corin Ashley from Cambridge, Massachusetts, here to talk about my album Songs from the Brill Bedroom. My background really is in loud, screaming, reaming rock and roll bands. For almost 10 years, I was the bass player and lead singer and one of the main writers in a fairly hyper mod pop, power pop band called The Pills. We, you know, spent a lot of time in a van touring around the United States and a lot of forays up into the Great White North of Canada, and enjoyed a pretty good level of success in Spain, actually. Strangely enough, we ended up doing a tour there and had a song that got a lot of radio play. And then did a fairly successful tour of the UK right before we kind of went on hiatus. Our guitar player, who was the other main songwriter in the band, moved to Seattle. It was a job-related move, and it was definitely a natural sort of thing where, you know, it seemed like the band had been working pretty hard for about 10 years. Put out 3 CDs. I'm constantly surprised to find people who have them. They send me nice emails, and it's very heartening. We had a small group of people out there who seemed to care about us intently. And our shtick, if you will, was a lot of jumping around. All our songs were about 2 minutes long. They were really fast, short pop songs with a lot of three-part harmonies on the choruses. And, we had a lot of British influences from the Kinks and the Who to the Jam and the Buzzcocks and the Clash. But there was just as much Cheap Trick and AC/DC in there as well. So it was your basic loud rock and roll band is what we were.
Okay, then let's get on with the song. This first one is called Gin and Panic. Tell us a little about that one.
This is a number called Gin and Panic, which was written very much after the fashion of early George Harrison solo albums, like All Things Must Pass, which is one of my favorite albums of all time. And this is the song where I really knew I was making a solo album. Before that, I just kind of had a collection of loose acoustic songs, and I was just recording them because I wanted to use this new 8-track I got. But when I wrote this, that's when I knew I was making a solo album. I was going in a different direction. So this is Gin and Panic.
Thank you.
lit up the night. Lashings of fabulous for all. Now backbeat on your doldrums and those tired lines. Paul, you, bloom is off the rose. The bloom is off the rose. You can try a different city, try.
That's a great song. That's Gin and Panic. So my next question then, tell us about the new CD. Why did you record it, and what are you hoping to achieve with it?
Well, as the band started to wind down, I was giving a lot of thought as to, you know, what the hell I was going to do next. And it seemed clear to me that I should try to do something different than the Pills. And I've always done acoustic shows. I've always had a lot of songs that weren't right for a rock band that I would just play at these acoustic shows. So that was one factor. And then the other thing is that I've been recording for years and years and years, but I never had a home studio. I never had like a little 4-track Porta studio or anything like that. And I was spending a lot of time surfing on the tape op board and building up the confidence to go out and buy an Otari half-inch 8-track machine, reel-to-reel. And, you know, I got a dodgy one first. I bought one from some hippie in Denver, you know, real cheap. and it got here, and there were missing parts. And of course, I didn't know that because I'd never owned one before. So I spent like 6 months trying to figure out why that one wasn't working before I spent the dough to get the right machine. And I would say that, you know, buying that machine was the number one influence on actually kickstarting this project.
Okay, then let's do another song. Next one's going to be File Me Under Regret. Tell us a little about that one.
Well, File Me, I'm very proud of because it features my very first ever backwards guitar solo, which, you know, I'm a bass player, so I never get to play solos, let alone backwards guitar solos. But what I figured out when doing this was that when Jimi Hendrix and, you know, Sid Barrett and McCartney and those guys were doing backwards guitar parts, you know, they didn't have to enlist the engineering help of their wives, who would really much rather be watching something on TV and were getting annoyed that I couldn't nail this on the first couple takes. So this has a special engineering credit to Darcy, who helped me flip the reels, I think, 8 or 9 times before, before she decided that this was a good enough backwards guitar solo.
Oh, It's the Homemade Hit Show.
Great stuff again. That was File Me Under Regret. It's a really, really good song. Okay, then, next question for you. How was the CD, and where were the CD recorded, and what equipment are you using?
Well, the album was recorded in my apartment with, you know, sort of owner's manuals strewn all over the furniture. You know, I call my home studio the Brill Bedroom kind of grandly. It's just a room, you know. I couldn't do the drums here because of my neighbors, basically. So I dragged the 8-track out to this barn that a friend of mine owns out in Worcester. And he's actually kind of a clever little recording engineer sort. So he helped me mic the drums properly. We only used 3 mics on the drums, though. We had a kick drum mic, snare, and then one over the drummer's shoulder. And I stood about 6 feet in front of Matt B., the drummer, with my acoustic mic'd in stereo, and that was kind of the bleed, the room sound for the drum kit, you know. So we recorded, you know, almost the whole album in one day like that, live to the 8-track. Some of the vocals are live takes. And then I brought it back to the apartment and added Hofner bass and Epiphone Casino and Gretsch, you know, just all my Beatle guitars, you know. And then it started to get a little weird because I had, you know, most of the album on those 8 tracks, and it sounded really good, and I was very wary about adding to it, but you know how these things go. You know, one backwards guitar solo turns into a string section, turns into, you know, all sorts of weirdnesses going on, and next thing you know, you're playing string parts, you know, bowing a guitar with an E string, you know. So things got a little ornate, but that's the essence of how it all went down.
Okay, then what, perhaps an obvious question, but who are your musical influences?
Without a doubt, the primary influence on this album was just all my favorite records that have an Apple on the label, you know. And that would be not only the Beatles, but their early solo albums, like McCartney's first solo album, Ram, and Plastic Ono Band, and George Harrison, All Things Must Pass. But also, you know, I'm a huge Badfinger fan. Billy Preston, Jackie Lomax, and things like Harry Nilsson and Emmett Rhodes, who's kind of, I guess, an associate Beatle. but he's the guy who started all this home recording thing, really, you know. But those were the big influences that I let fly free on this album.
Yeah, well, I'd definitely say some of those influences were a little obvious and not too hard to guess. Okay, let's have some more music then. This next one is called Royal Standard. Tell us about that one.
The Royal Standard is actually one of my favorite tracks on the album, and it was, of course, inspired by a night of drunken karaoke, as one might guess, but also partially inspired by the Fountains of Wayne song Sick Day from their first album, which kind of hints at one of my favorite sort of subjects, I guess, is the idea of the working girls out there who, you know, are forced to work regular jobs that are way beneath their station in life, and really they're just living fantastic, glamorous lives within their minds, you know. So this is for all the working girls out there. And it's also the track where I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get strings on this, so I tried to do a string part by bowing a Nashville-tuned electric Epiphone guitar, and then putting that through like a Leslie simulator. It's kind of ducked down in the mix, but that's because I actually did end up getting a small string section in the apartment, which is, you know, very intimidating. If you hire these guys, they'll show up, and then, you know, you find yourself in your apartment conducting, which is very strange. But I wrote out the arrangement and everything, and, you know, I'm kind of proud of the string parts that I wrote. And this is the Royal Standard.
She treads the lime-colored moonbeam that lines the carpet in the hallway past her mother's room. She's stepping out to breathe deep the spotlight. Soft shoulder on the side of the highway, she climbs the Jersey barrier to the other side. Touch both the headlights to a knee. To royal subjects at the cast-off cabaret. A crown comes from a catalogue of B-sides and rejects. All hail the queen.
next morning, buttoned down and at her desk. Hours may linger, and her cubicle is cold and gray. She's making piles, cold lady, and daydreams. Looks like the copier is down again. Fifth time this month, could you stop on your lunch hour? She smiles sweetly, she knows where she's going. Karaoke queen waving to her loyal subjects, the cast of Cabaret. A crown comes from a catalog of B-sides and rejects. All hail the song. She spots a so familiar shock of hair. A nice man from the next desk over says, what on earth are you doing up there, Miss Sinclair? Karaoke queen belting out the royal standard in a smoky lunchtime bar on a Tuesday in a small town in the middle of Rhode Island, when she should be back at work, but she's hitching up her skirt. Karaoke queen waving to her loyal subject at the cast off cabaret. Karaoke queen waving to her loyal subjects at the cast off cabaret. The crown comes from a catalog of B-sides and rejects. All hail the queen. All hail the queen. God save the queen.
Okay, that was The Royal Standard. Again, I can't repeat too many times how great I think this music is. Really an inspiration, I think, to home musicians all over the place. Okay, the next question then for you. Are there any other artists who are making music at home that you think we should be looking out for?
Well, you know, as I said, the first McCartney album, which is, you know, pretty raw, and that was all done at his house. And Emmett Rhodes made some great records out in the garage there with all that 60-cycle hum. You know, all the 60-cycle hum on my album is in homage to Emmett. There's also a great band called Cotton Mather that did an album called Contiki. It's an early 90s album that's just a total masterpiece of home recording. It was actually done on ADATs. Doesn't sound like it, but that's incredible. And there's a fantastic guy in Cardiff, Wales named Brave Captain who does a remix on my album. But you really should hear the stuff this guy does on his laptop at his house. It's like, you know, music from the future.
How about any advice for other people recording at home?
Well, I'm not certain I'm the right person to give advice. I'm still trying to find my own way along here. But I guess I would say that, especially with digital platforms, Pro Tools, etc., there's a real tendency towards over-perfecting the music. And, you know, there's a lot of trickery and finagling that goes on, and these tools are available to us, so of course we tend to use them. But I really feel that overdoing that, people can really feel that, you know. And if there's one thing about my album that I think is positive is that, you know, there's a little finagling that went on, of course, in the making of the album to make it sound as good as possible. But I didn't, I tried to actually sing the songs, you know, like the verses, at least each verse has its own integrity. At least I sang the verse all the way through, and then maybe I sang the bridge all the way through. And, you know, in the case of some of the songs, I sang the whole song all the way through, which is, you know, the way they used to do it all the time. So I don't think you should be afraid if you've got a great vocal take and there's one note that's just a slight bit, you know, hairy. Leave it in, because I think people are really missing that in music today.
Well, that's good advice, but maybe you should let me know what to do when there's only one note that's on key. That might help me a bit more. Okay, another song then. This one's Ladybug.
Ladybug is the one up-tempo number on the album and is included as a firm homage to one of my favorite songs of all time by the Rolling Stones, a song called Dandelion that I just love. And what I really like about this song is that it features my RMI, electric harpsichord, which seems to pop up on just about everything I do. It's a very, very high-tech piece of equipment, highly sought after by collectors, I can assure you. And it was at one time favored by such keyboard luminaries as Linda McCartney and also Linda McCartney. So there you go. This is Ladybug.
Again, that was Ladybug, and anything that features the fabulous stylings of Linda McCartney has got to be all right with me. So we're getting near the end now. We only have one song left. Just tell us a little about where people can find you on the web and where they can buy the CD.
I'm dead easy to find. Just go to www.corinashley.com, which is spelled CORINASHLEY. .com. There's a link to my MySpace page. There's some MP3s you can download for free. Put them on your iPoop, swirl them around, make them part of your personal soundtrack.
Good the stuff there. Okay, we'll pause a little minute for some show business. Just wrap up here. As I said earlier, www.homemadehitshow.com. She'll be back to a normal show next week. Keep sending the songs in, homemadehitshow@gmail.com. Pop in the forums and make some comments. And that's about it for show business. And as one thing I was going to say, actually, I've been looking for someone to do another guest host. So if you're interested in that, drop me a line. It can be a little bit of hard work. It's pulling together six songs and doing all the talking in between with the massively hilarious sense of humor that I have, of course. A little good news here before we finish up. I've got a copy of Corin's CD to give away. So anyone patient enough to stick through all this talking, send me a email, put contest in the subject line, or Corin Ashley, or let's just say Corin Contest. Anyone who puts Corin Contest in the subject of the email, you win the CD, I'll pick it at random, I'll send it out to you, and I'll tell you, I've got a copy Corin gave me, because I'm, you know, in the biz. It's a great CD, and just amazing to think it was made at home. So let's finish up with Corin. We've got one song left. And the last question for you, just wanted to see if there's anything Corin wanted to say before we finish.
Well, I suppose. Thank you, really. Oh, listen. There's a plane flying over the Brill bedroom right now. Anyway, I guess I just want to say thank you for the interest. You know, this is an album that's very personal to me. I did it at home all by myself, you know. And it's the first thing I've ever put out with my own name on it. So, you know, some of the nice emails I've been getting. And the album keeps selling, which is very confusing for me. I didn't expect that. People keep buying it. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Mom. I know it's you buying all the copies, but thank you anyway.
Okay, then, pretty much time for the end of the show. We've got one last song. Karen will introduce it. We'll play the song, and then we'll be done. Check back next week, and thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Just a change for the show. I found Karen's comments pretty interesting all the way through, so hopefully you did too. So this last song is, let me check the paper here. The last song is called High School 1978.
So the album was recorded on the 8-track, and then it was actually mixed in Pro Tools simply because the engineer I wanted to mix with, a guy named Ducky Carlisle, uses that platform, and he's great at it. So transferred it to Pro Tools, and of course a couple of things got added here and there. But interestingly enough, during the mix sessions over Christmas, we took a little break, and I wrote this piano song, which is one of the – I haven't written a song on piano in ages, so it's kind of cool. And you know how these things go. Of course, it seemed incredibly imperative to get that on the album. So right in the middle of mixing everything, he just literally threw up two mics on the piano, two mics on the drums, and we did this song live. And then I overdubbed Hofner bass and a vocal through this great Sound Deluxe tube mic that he has. And I actually think this sounds just as analog as anything on the album. It sounds like Plastic Ono Band to me. So it's interesting that, you know, it's totally Pro Tools, this song. And it's recorded at home, but it's somebody else's home. So it kind of fits into the theme. This is Hill School 1978, my big dramatic meatloaf Billy Joel ballad.
Hush, hush, whispers in the hallway, tense discussions behind closed doors. And Daddy's study has been occupied of late. What shall we do with the boy? What shall we do with the boy? Divide and conquer the asset. Grand debates one by one. She demands all the period furniture. He's bequeathed all the guns. But what shall we do with the boy? What shall we do with the boy? St. Paul, you overheard Father Scoffing. He'd never survive in those halls. Took comfort in his laughter, the familiar derision, collateral casualty she was punted off to the faculty. So often a father leaves nothing behind but a name. A trifling bother that keeps coming up even after it's changed. Harsh words in the hallway, and a meeting is called with them all. Now the family together, wringing their hands and wondering, what shall we do with the boy? What shall we do with the boy?
shall we do with the boy? What shall we do with the boy?
Now, some of us are leaving, and that is sad. But this isn't the end. No way. We're gonna show this world a thing or two. We're gonna show...